way. She was less likely to be there for him when Bod went down to the nettle patch to see her, and on the rare occasions when she was, she would be short-tempered, argumentative, and often downright rude. Bod talked to Mr. Owens about this, and after a few moments' reflection, his father said,
"It's just women, I reckon. She liked you as a boy, probably isn't sure who you are now you're a young man. I used to play with one little girl down by the duck pond every day until she turned about your age, and then she threw an apple at my head and did not say another word to me until I was 17.
Mrs. Owens sniffed.
"It was a pear I threw, and I was talking to you again soon enough, for we danced a measure at your cousin Ned's wedding, and that was but 2 days after your 16th birthday."
"Of course, you're right, my dear."
He winked at Bod to tell him that it was none of it serious. And then he mouthed 17 to show that, really, it was. Bod had allowed himself no friends among the living. That way, he had realized back during his short-lived school days, lay only trouble. Still, he had remembered Scarlet, had missed her for years after she went away, had long ago faced the fact he would never see her again. And now, she had been here in his graveyard, and he had not known her. He was wandering deeper into the tangle of ivy and trees that made the graveyard's northwest quadrant so dangerous. Signs advised visitors to keep out, but the signs were not needed. It was uninviting and creepy once you were past the ivy tangle that marked the end of the Egyptian walk and the black doors in the mock Egyptian walls that led to people's final resting places. In the northwest, nature had been reclaiming the graveyard for almost 100 years, and the stones were tipped over. Graves were forgotten, or simply lost beneath the green ivy and the leaf fall of 50 years. Paths were lost and impassable. Bod walked with care. He knew the area well, and he knew how dangerous it could be. When Bod was 9, he had been exploring in just this part of the world when the soil had given way beneath him, tumbling him into a hole almost 20 feet down. The grave had been dug deep to accommodate many coffins, but there was no headstone and only one coffin down at the bottom, containing a rather excitable medical gentleman named Carstairs, who seemed thrilled by Bod's arrival and insisted on examining Bod's wrist, which Bod had twisted in the tumble, grabbing onto a root, before he could be persuaded to go and fetch help. Bod was making his way through the northwest quadrant, a sludge of fallen leaves, a tangle of ivy, where the foxes made their homes, and fallen angels stared up blindly, because he had an urge to talk to the poet. Nehemiah Trott was the poet's name, and his gravestone beneath the greenery read, "Here lies the mortal remains of Nehemiah Trott, poet, 1741 to 1774. Swans sing before they die."
"Master Trott, might I ask you for advice?"
Nehemiah Trott beamed wanly.
"Of course, brave boy. The advice of poets is the cordiality of kings. How may I smear unction on your... No, not unction. How may I give balm to your pain?"
"I'm not actually in pain. I just... Well, there's a girl I used to know. And I wasn't sure if I should find her and talk to her, or if I should just forget about it."
Nehemiah Trott drew himself up to his full height, which was less than Bod's, raised both hands to his chest excitedly, and said,
Oh, you must go to her and implore her. You must call her your Terpsichore, your Echo, your Clytemnestra. You must write poems for her, mighty odes. I shall help you write them. And thus, and only thus, shall you win your true love's heart.
I don't actually need to win her heart. She's not my true love. Just someone I'd like to talk to.
Of all the organs, the tongue is the most remarkable, for we use it both to taste our sweet wine and bitter poison. Thus also do we utter words both sweet and sour with the same tongue. Go to her, talk to her.
I shouldn't.
You should, sir. You must. I shall write about it when the battle's lost and won.
But if I unfade for one person, it makes it easier for other people to see me.
Ah, list to me, young Leander, young hero, young Alexander. If you dare nothing, then when the day is over, nothing is all you will have gained.
Good point.
Bard was pleased with himself, and glad he had thought of asking the poet for advice.
Really, if you couldn't trust a poet to offer sensible advice, who could you trust?
Which reminded him.
Mr. Trot, tell me about revenge.
Dish best served cold. Do not take revenge in the heat of the moment. Instead, wait until the hour is propitious. There was a Grub Street hack named O'Leary, an Irishman, I should add, who had the nerve, the confounded cheek, to write of my first slim volume of poems, A Nosegay of Beauty Assembled for Gentlemen of Quality, that it was inferior doggerel of no worth whatsoever, and that the paper it was written on would have been better used as... No, I cannot say. Let us simply agree that it was a most vulgar statement.
But you got your revenge on him.
On him? And on his entire pestilent breed. Oh, I had my revenge, Master Owens, and it was a terrible one. I wrote, and had published, a letter, which I nailed to the doors of the public houses in London where such low, scribbling folk were wont to frequent, and I explained that, given the fragility of the genius poetical, I would henceforth write... Not for them, but only for myself and posterity, and that I should, as long as I lived, publish no more poems for them. Thus I left instructions that upon my death my poems were to be buried with me, unpublished, and that only when posterity realized my genius, realized that hundreds of my verses had been lost, lost! Only then was my coffin to be disinterred. Only then could my poems be removed from my cold, dead hand to finally be published to the approbation and delight of all. It is a terrible thing to be ahead of your time.
And after you died, they dug you up and they printed the poems?
Not yet, no. But there is still plenty of time. Posterity is vast.
So, that was your revenge?
Indeed, and a mightily powerful and cunning one at that.
Yes.
Best served cold.
Bard left the northwest of the graveyard, returned through the Egyptian walk, to the more orderly paths and untangled ways, and as the dusk fell, he wandered back towards the old chapel, not because he hoped Silas had returned from his travels, but because he had spent his life visiting the chapel at dusk, and it felt good to have a rhythm. And anyway, he was hungry. Bod slipped through the crypt door, down into the crypt. He moved a cardboard box, filled with curled and damp parish papers, and took out a carton of orange juice, an apple, a box of breadsticks, and a block of cheese. And he ate while pondering how and whether he would seek out Scarlet. He would dreamwalk, perhaps, since that was how she had come to him. he headed outside, was on his way to sit on the grey wooden bench when he saw something, and he hesitated. There was someone already there, sitting on his bench. She was reading a magazine. Bod faded even more, became a part of the graveyard, no more important than a shadow or a twig. But she looked up. She looked straight at him.
Bod, is that you?
He said nothing. Then he said,
Why, can you see me?
I almost couldn't. At first I thought you were a shadow or something, but you look like you did in my dream. You sort of came into focus.
He walked over to the bench.
Can you actually read that? Isn't it too dark for you?
Scarlet closed the magazine.
It's odd. You'd think it would be too dark, but I could read it fine. No problem.
Are you...
He trailed off, uncertain of what he had wanted to ask her.
Are you here on your own?
She nodded.
I helped Mr. Frost do some grave rubbings after school, and then I told him I wanted to sit and think here for a bit. When I'm done here, I promise to go and have a cup of tea with him, and he'll run me home. He didn't even ask why. Just said he loves sitting in graveyards too, and that he thinks they can be the most peaceful places in the world. Can I hug you?
Do you want to?
Yes.
Well then.
He thought for a moment.
I don't mind if you do.
My hands won't go through you or anything. You're really there.
You won't go through me.
She threw her arms around him and squeezed him so tightly he could hardly breathe.
That hurts.
Scarlet let go.
Sorry.
No, it was nice. I mean, you just squeezed more than I was expecting.
I just wanted to know if you were real. All these years I thought you were just something in my head. And then I sort of forgot about you. But I didn't make you up. And you're back. You're in my head. And you're in the world too.
Bod smiled.
You used to wear a sort of a coat. It was orange. And whenever I saw that particular colour orange, I'd think of you. I don't suppose you still have the coat.
No, not for a long time. It would be a wee bit too small for me now.
Yes, of course.
I should go home. I thought I could come up on the weekend, though.
And then, seeing the expression on Bod's face, she said,
Today's Wednesday.
I'd like that.
She turned to go. Then she said,
How will I find you next time?
I'll find you. Don't worry. Just be on your own, and I'll find you.
She nodded and was gone. Bod walked back into the graveyard and up the hill until he reached the Frobisher Mausoleum. He did not enter it. He climbed up the side of the building, using the thick ivy root as a foothold, and he pulled himself up onto the stone roof, where he sat and thought, looking out at the world of moving things beyond the graveyard. And he remembered the way that Scarlet had held him, and how safe he had felt, if only for a moment, and how fine it would be to walk safely in the lands beyond the graveyard, and how good it was to be master of his own small world. Scarlet said that she didn't want a cup of tea, thank you, or a chocolate biscuit. Mr. Frost was concerned.
Honestly, you look like you've seen a ghost. Well, a graveyard, not a bad place to see one if you were going to, I had an aunt once who claimed her parrot was haunted. She was a Scarlet Macaw. The parrot. The aunt was an architect. Never knew the details.
I'm fine. It was just a long day.
I'll give you a lift home, then. Any idea what this says? Been puzzling over it for half an hour.
He indicated a grave rubbing on the little table, held flat by a jam jar in each corner.
Is that name Gladstone, do you think? Could be a relative of the Prime Minister. but I can't make out anything else.
Freed, no. But I'll take another look when I come out on Saturday.
Is your mother likely to put in an appearance?
She said she'd drop me off here in the morning. Then she has to go and get groceries for our dinner. She's cooking a roast chicken.
Do you think there are likely to be roast potatoes?
I expect so, yes.
Mr. Frost looked delighted.
I wouldn't want to put her out of her way, I mean.
She's loving it. Thank you for giving me a lift home.
More than welcome.
They walked together down the steps in Mr. Frost's high, narrow house to the little entrance hall at the bottom of the stairs. In Krakow, on Wawel Hill, there are caves called the Dragon's Den, named after a long-dead dragon. These are the caves that the tourists know about. There are caves beneath those caves that the tourists do not know and do not ever get to visit. They go down a long way, and they are inhabited. Silas went first, followed by the grey hugeness of Miss Lupescu, padding quietly on 4 feet just behind him. Behind them was Kandar, a bandage-wrapped Assyrian mummy with powerful eagle wings and eyes like rubies, who was carrying a small pig. There had originally been 4 of them, but they had lost a room in a cave far above when the Ifrit, as naturally overconfident as are all of its race, had stepped into a space bounded by 3 polished bronze mirrors and had been swallowed up in a blaze of bronze light. In moments, the Ifrit could only be seen in the mirrors and no longer in reality. In the mirrors, his fiery eyes were wide open and his mouth was moving as if he was shouting at them to leave and beware. And then he faded and was lost to them. Silas, who had no problems with mirrors, had covered one of them with his coat, rendering the trap useless.
So, now there are only 3 of us.
And the pig.
Why?
Asked Miss Lupescu, with a wolf tongue through wolf teeth.
Why the pig?
It's lucky.
Miss Lupescu growled, unconvinced.
Did Arun have a pig?
Hush, they are coming. From the sound of it, there are many of them.
Let them come.
Miss Lupescu's hackles were rising. She said nothing, but she was ready for them, and it was only by an effort of will that she did not throw back her head and howl.
It's beautiful up this way.
Yes.
So, your family were all killed. Does anyone know who did it?
No. Not that I know. My guardian only says that the man who did it is still alive, and that he'll tell me the rest of what he knows one day.
One day?
When I'm ready.
What's he scared of? That you'd strap on your gun and ride out to wreak vengeance on the man who killed your family?
Bod looked at her seriously.
Well, obviously. Not a gun, though. But yes, something like that.
You're joking.
Bod said nothing. His lips were tight-pressed together. He shook his head.
I'm not joking.
It was a bright and sunny Saturday morning. They were just past the entrance to the Egyptian Walk, out of the direct sunlight, under the pines and the sprawling monkey puzzle tree.
Your guardian. Is he a dead person, too?
I don't talk about him.
Scarlet looked hurt.
Not even to me?
Not even to you.
Well, be like that.
Look, I'm sorry, I didn't mean...
I promised Mr. Frost I wouldn't be too long. I'd better be getting back.
Right,
said Bod, worried he had offended her, unsure what he should say to make anything better. He watched Scarlet head off on the winding path back to the chapel. A familiar female voice said, with derision,
Look at her, Miss High and Mighty.
but there was no one to be seen. Bod, feeling awkward, walked back to the Egyptian walk. Miss Lilibet and Miss Violet had let him store a cardboard box filled with old paperback books in their vault, and he wanted to find something to read. Scarlet helped Mr. Frost with his grave rubbings until midday, when they stopped for lunch. He offered to buy her fish and chips as a thank you, and they walked down to the fish and chip shop at the bottom of the road, and as they walked back up the hill, they ate their steaming fish and chips, drenched in vinegar and glittering with salt out of paper bags.
If you wanted to find out about a murder, where would you look? I already tried the internet.
Depends. What kind of murder are we talking about?
Something local, I think. About 13 or 14 years ago. A family was killed around here.
Crikey. This really happened?
Oh, yes. Are you all right?
Not really. Bit too... well, bit of a wimp, really. Things like that, I mean... local true crime, you don't like to think about it. Things like that happening here. Not something I'd expect a girl of your age to be interested in.
It's not actually for me. It's for a friend.
Mr. Frost finished off the last of his fried cod.
The library, I suppose. If it's not on the internet, it'll be in their newspaper files. What set you off after this?
Oh...
Scarlet wanted to lie as little as possible.
A boy I know. He was asking about it.
Definitely the library. Murder. Ugh. Gives me the shivers.
Me too. A bit. Could you maybe, possibly, drop me off at the library this afternoon?
Mr. Frost bit a large chip in half, chewed it, and looked at the rest of the chip. Disappointed.
They get cold so fast, don't they, chips? One minute you're burning your mouth on them, the next you're wondering how they cool off so quickly.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't be asking for rides everywhere.
Not at all. Just wondering how best to organise this afternoon, and whether or not your mother likes chocolates. Bottle of wine? Or chocolates? Not really sure. Both, maybe?
I can make my own way home from the library. And she loves chocolates. So do I.
Chocolates it is, then.
They had reached the middle of the row of high-terraced houses on the hill, and the little green mini parked outside.
Get in. I'll run you over to the library.
The library was a square building, all brick and stone, dating back to the beginning of the last century. Scarlet looked around, and then went up to the desk.
Yes. I wanted to see some old newspaper clippings.
Is it for school?
It's local history,
said Scarlet, nodding, proud that she hadn't actually lied.
We've got the local paper on microfiche,
said the woman. She was large and had silver hoops in her ears. Scarlet could feel her heart pounding in her chest. She was certain she looked guilty. Or suspicious. But the woman led her into a room with boxes that looked like computer screens, and showed her how to use them, to project a page of the newspaper at a time onto the screen.
One day we'll have it all digitized. Now, what dates are you after?
About 13 or 14 years ago. I can't be more specific than that. I'll know it when I see it.
The woman gave Scarlet a small box with 5 years' worth of newspapers on microfilm in it.
Go wild.
Scarlet assumed that the murder of a family would have been front-page news. But instead, when she eventually found it, it was almost buried on page 5. It had happened in October, 13 years earlier. There was no colour in the article, no description, just an understated list of events. Architect Ronald Dorian, 36, his wife Carlotta, 34, a publisher, and their daughter Misty, 7, were found dead at 33 Dunstan Road. Foul play is suspected. A police spokesman said that it was too early to comment at this stage in their investigations, but that significant leads are being followed. There was no mention of how the family died, and nothing said about a missing baby. In the weeks that followed, there was no follow-up, and the police did not ever comment. Not that Scarlett could see. But that was it. She was certain. 33 Dunstan Road. She knew the house. She had been in there. She returned the box of microfilm to the front desk, thanked the librarian, and walked home in the April sunshine. Her mother was in the kitchen, cooking. Not entirely successfully, judging from the smell of burnt bottom of the saucepan that filled most of the flat. Scarlett retreated to her bedroom and opened the windows wide to let the burnt smell out. Then she sat on her bed and made a phone call.
Hello, Mr. Frost?
Scarlett? Everything's still all right for this evening? How's your mother?
Oh, it's all under control.
Which was what her mother had said when she had asked.
Mr. Frost, how long have you lived at your house?
How long? About, well, 4 months now?
How did you find it?
Estate agent's window. It was empty and I could afford it. Well, more or less. Well, I wanted something within walking distance of the graveyard, and this was perfect.
Mr. Frost.
Scarlett wondered how to say it. And then just said it.
About 13 years ago, 3 people were murdered in your house. The Dorian family.
There was a silence at the other end of the phone.
Mr. Frost, are you there?
Still here, Scarlett. Sorry, not the sort of thing you expect to hear. It's an old house. I mean, you expect things to happen a long time ago, but not... Well, what happened?
Scarlett wondered how much she could tell him.
There was a little piece on it. In an old newspaper. It only gave the address, and nothing else. I don't know how they died or anything.
Well, good Lord.
Mr. Frost sounded more intrigued by the news than Scarlett could have expected.
This, young Scarlett, is where we local historians come into our own. Leave it with me. I'll find out everything I can and report back.
Thank you.
I assume this phone call is because if Nuna thought there were murders going on in my home, even 13-year-old ones, you'd never be allowed to see me or the graveyard again. So, suppose I won't mention it unless you do.
Thank you, Mr. Frost.
See you at 7. With chocolates.
Dinner was remarkably pleasant. The burnt smell had gone from the kitchen. The chicken was good. The salad was better. The roast potatoes were too crispy, but a delighted Mr. Frost had proclaimed that this was precisely the way he liked them, and had taken a second helping. The flowers were popular. The chocolates, which they had for dessert, were perfect. And Mr. Frost sat and talked, then watched television with them, until about 10 p.m., when he said that he needed to get home.
Time, tide, and historical research wait for no man.
He shook Nuna's hand with enthusiasm, winked at Scarlett conspiratorially, and was out the door. Scarlett tried to find Bod in her dreams that night. She thought of him as she went to sleep, imagined herself walking the graveyard looking for him. But when she did dream, it was a wandering around Glasgow city centre with her friends from her old school. They were hunting for a specific street, but all they found was a succession of dead ends, one after another. Deep beneath the hill in Krakow, in the deepest vault, beneath the caves they call the Dragon's Den, Miss Lupescu stumbled and fell. Silas crouched beside her and cradled Miss Lupescu's head in his hands. There was blood on her face, and some of it was hers.
You must leave me. Save the boy.
She was halfway now, halfway between grey wolf and woman, but her face was a woman's face.
No, I won't leave you.
Behind him, Kandar cradled its piglet like a child might hold a doll. The mummy's left wing was shattered, and it would never fly again, but its bearded face was implacable.
They will come back, Silas. Too soon, the sun will rise.
Then we must deal with them before they are ready to attack. Can you stand?
Da. I am one of the hounds of God. I will stand.
She lowered her face into the shadows, flexed her fingers. When she raised her head again, it was a wolf's head. She put her front paws down on the rock and laboriously pushed herself up into a standing position. A grey wolf, bigger than a bear, her coat and muzzle flecked with blood. She threw back her head and howled a howl of fury and of challenge. Her lips curled back from her teeth, and she lowered her head once more.
Now we end this.
Late on Sunday afternoon, the telephone rang. Scarlet was sitting downstairs, laboriously copying faces from the manga she had been reading onto scrap paper. Her mother picked up the phone.
Funny, we were just talking about you.
Although they hadn't been.
It was wonderful. I had the best time. Honestly, it was no trouble. The chocolates, they were perfect, just perfect. I told Scarlet to tell you. Any time you want a good dinner, you just let me know. Scarlet? Yes, she's here. I'll put her on. Scarlet!
I'm just here, Mum. You don't have to shout.
She took the phone.
Mr. Frost?
Scarlet, the thing we were talking about, the thing that happened in my house... You can tell this friend of yours that I found out... Listen, when you said a friend of yours, did you mean it in the sense of we're actually talking about you? Or is there a real person, if it's not a personal question?
I've got a real friend who wants to know.
Her mother shot her a puzzled look.
Tell your friend that I did some digging. Not literally, more like rummaging. Well... A fair amount of actual looking around, and I think I might have unearthed some very real information, stumbled over something hidden. Well, not something I think we should spread around. I found things out.
Like what?
Look, don't think I'm mad, but, well, as far as I can tell, three people were killed. One of them, the baby, I think, wasn't. It wasn't a family of three. It was a family of four. Only three of them died. Tell him to come and see me, your friend. I'll fill him in.
I'll tell him.
She put down the phone, her heart beating like a snare. Bod walked down the narrow stone stairs for the first time in 6 years. His footsteps echoed in the chamber inside the hill. He reached the bottom of the steps and waited for the sleer to manifest. And he waited and waited, but nothing appeared. Nothing whispered. Nothing moved. He looked around the chamber, untroubled by the deep darkness, seeing it as the dead see. He walked over to the altar stone set in the floor, where the cup and the brooch and the stone knife sat. He reached down and touched the edge of the knife. It was sharper than he had expected, and it nicked the skin of his finger.
It is the treasure of the sphere.
But it sounded smaller than he remembered, more hesitant.
You're the oldest thing here. I came to talk to you. I want advice.
A pause.
Nothing comes to the Sphere for advice. The Sphere guards, the Sphere waits.
I know, but Silas isn't here, and I don't know who else to talk to.
Nothing was said. Just a silence in reply that echoed of dust and loneliness.
I don't know what to do. I think I can find out about who killed my family, who wanted to kill me. It means leaving the graveyard, though.
The Sphere said nothing. Smoke tendrils twined slowly around the inside of the chamber.
I'm not frightened of dying. It's just so many people I care for have spent so much time keeping me safe, teaching me, protecting me.
Again, silence.
I have to do this on my own.
Yes.
That's all then. Sorry I bothered you.
It whispered into Bod's head. Then, in a voice that was a sleek, insinuating glide,
"The Sphere was set to guard the treasure until our master returned. Are you our master?"
"No." "I'm afraid not."
"If you were our master, we could hold you in our coils forever. If you were our master, we would keep you safe and protect you until the end of time and never let you of the world."
"I am not your master."
"No."
Bod felt the Sphere writhing through his mind.
"Then find your name."
And his mind was empty, and the room was empty, and Bod was alone. Bod walked back up the stairs, carefully yet quickly. He had come to a decision and needed to act fast while the decision still burned in his mind. Scarlet was waiting for him on the bench by the chapel.
"Well?"
"I'll do it. Come on."
Side by side, they walked the path down to the graveyard gates. Number 33 was a tall house, spindly thin, in the middle of a terraced row. It was red brick and unmemorable. Bod looked at it uncertainly, wondering why it did not seem familiar or special. It was only a house like any other. There was a small, concreted space in front of it that wasn't a garden. A green mini parked on the street. The front door had once been painted a bright blue, but had been dimmed by time and the sun.
"Well?"
Bod knocked on the door. There was nothing. Then a clatter of feet on the stairs from inside, and the door opened to reveal an entryway and stairs. Framed in the doorway was a bespectacled man with receding grey hair, who blinked at them, then stuck out his hand at Bod and smiled nervously.
You must be Miss Perkins' mysterious friend. Good to meet you.
This is Bod.
Bob?
Bod, with a D. Bod, this is Mr. Frost.
Bod and Frost shook hands.
Kettle's on. What say we swap information over a cuppa?
They followed him up the steps to a kitchen, where he poured 3 mugs of tea, then led them into a small sitting room.
The house just keeps going up. The toilet's on the next floor up, my office, then bedrooms above that. Keeps you fit, all the stairs.
They sat on a large, extremely purple sofa.
It was already here when I came.
And they sipped their tea. Scarlet had worried that Mr. Frost would ask Bod lots of questions, but he didn't. He just seemed excited, as if he had identified the lost gravestone of someone famous and desperately wanted to tell the world. He kept moving impatiently in his chair, as if he had something enormous to impart to them, and not blurting it out immediately was a physical strain.
So what did you find out?
Well, you were right. I mean, this was the house where those people were killed. And it... I think the crime was... well, not exactly hushed up, but forgotten about. Let go. By the authorities.
I don't understand. Murders don't get swept under the carpet.
This one was.
He drained his tea.
There are people out there who have influence. It's the only explanation for that, and for what happened to the youngest child.
And what was that?
He lived. I'm sure of it. But there wasn't a manhunt. A missing toddler normally would be national news. But they must have squashed it somehow.
Who are they?
The same people who had the family killed.
Do you know any more than that?
Yes. Well, a little. I'm sorry, Look, given what I found, it's all too incredible.
Scarlet was starting to feel frustrated.
What did you find?
Frost looked shamefaced.
You're right. I'm sorry. Getting into keeping secrets, not a good idea. Historians don't bury things. We dig them up. Show people. Yes. I found a letter. Upstairs. It was hidden under a loose floorboard.
He turned to Bod.
Young man. Would I be correct in assuming your interest in this business, this dreadful business, is personal?
Bod nodded.
I won't ask any more,
said Mr. Frost, and he stood up.
Come on,
he said to Bod.
Not you, though. Not yet. I'll show him, and if he says it's all right, I'll show you as well. Deal?
Deal.
We won't be long. Come on, lad.
Bod stood up, darted a concerned look at Scarlet.
It's okay,
she said, and smiled at him as reassuringly as she could.
I'll wait here for you.
She watched their shadows as they walked out of the room and up the stairs. She felt nervous but expectant. She wondered what Bod would learn. And was happy that he would learn it first. It was his story, after all. It was his right. Out on the stairs, Mr. Frost led the way. Bod looked around as he walked up toward the top of the house, but nothing seemed familiar. It all seemed strange.
All the way to the very top.
They went up another flight of stairs.
I don't... well... you don't have to answer if you don't want to, but, you're the boy, aren't you?
Bod said nothing.
Here we are.
He turned the key in the door at the top of the house, pushed it open, and they went inside. The room was small, an attic room, with a sloping ceiling. 13 years before, it had held a crib. It barely held the man and the boy.
Stroke of luck, really. Under my own nose, so to speak.
He crouched down, pulled back the threadbare carpet.
So you know why my family were murdered?
It's all in here.
He reached down to a short length of floorboard and pushed at it until he was able to lever it out.
This would have been the baby's room. I'll show you the... You know, the only thing we don't know is just who did it. Nothing at all. We don't have the tiniest clue.
We know he has dark hair,
said Bod, in the room that had once been his bedroom.
And we know that his name is Jack.
Mr. Frost put his hand down into the empty space where the floorboard had been.
It's been almost 13 years, and hair gets thin and goes grey in 13 years. But yes, that's right. It's Jack.
He straightened up. The hand that had been in the hole in the floor was holding a large, sharp knife.
Now, boy, time to finish this.
Bod stared at him. It was as if Mr. Frost had been a coat or a hat the man had been wearing that he had now discarded. The affable exterior had gone. The light glinted on the man's spectacles and on the blade of the knife. A voice called up to them from further down the stairs. Scarlet's.
Mr. Frost, there's someone knocking at the front door. Should I get it?
The man, Jack, only glanced away for a moment, but Bod knew that the moment was all he had, and he faded. As completely, as utterly as he could. The man, Jack, looked back to where Bod had been, then stared around the room, puzzlement and rage competing on his face. He took a step further into the room, his head swinging from side to side like an old tiger scenting prey.
You're here somewhere. I can smell you.
Behind him, the little door to the attic bedroom slammed closed. And as he swung around, he heard the key turn in the lock.
It buys you moments, but it won't stop me, boy!
He called through the locked door.
We have unfinished business, you and I.
Bod threw himself down the stairs, bouncing into the walls, almost tumbling headlong in his rush to reach Scarlet.
Scarlet!
He said when he saw her.
It's him! Come on!
It's you! What are you talking about?
Him! Frost! He's Jack! He tried to kill me!
A bang from above, as the man Jack kicked at the door.
But...
Scarlet tried to make sense of what she was hearing.
But he's nice!
No,
said Bod, grabbing her hand and pulling her down the stairs into the hallway.
No, he's not!
Scarlet pulled open the front door.
Ah, good evening, young lady.
Said the man at the door, looking down at her.
We are looking for Mr. Frost. I believe this is his neck of the woods.
He had silver-white hair, and he smelled of cologne.
Are you friends of his?
Oh, yes,
said a smaller man, standing just behind. He had a small black moustache, and was the only one of the men to wear a hat.
Certainly are,
said a third, a younger man, huge and Nordic blonde.
Every man Jack of us,
said the last of the men, wide and bull-like, with a massive head. His skin was brown.
Mr. Frost, he had to go out.
But his car's here.
Who are you, anyway?
He's a friend of my mum's.
She could see Bod now on the other side of the group of men, gesturing frantically to her to leave the men and follow him.
He just popped out. Popped out for a newspaper. From the corner shop. Down there.
And she closed the door behind her, stepped around the men and began to walk away.
Where are you going?
I've got a bus to catch.
Scarlet walked up the hill towards the bus stop in the graveyard and did not, resolutely did not, look back. Bod walked beside her. Even to Scarlet, he seemed shadowy in the deepening dusk, like something that was almost not there, a shimmer of heat haze, a skittery leaf that for a moment had seemed to be a boy.
Walk faster. They're all looking at you, but don't run.
Who are they?
I don't know, but they all felt weird, like they weren't properly people. I want to go back and listen to them.
Of course they're people.
She walked up the hill as fast as she could without actually running, no longer certain that Bod was by her side. The four men stood at the door to number 33.
I don't like this.
You don't like this, Mr. Tarr. None of us like it. All wrong. Everything's going wrong.
Krakow's gone. They aren't answering. And after Melbourne and Vancouver, for all we know, we four are all that's left.
Quiet, please, Mr. Ketch. I'm thinking.
Sorry, sir,
said Mr. Ketch, and he patted his moustache with one gloved finger, looked up the hill and down again, and whistled through his teeth.
I think we should go after her.
I think you people should listen to me. I said quiet, and what I meant was quiet.
Sorry, Mr. Dandy.
They were quiet. In the silence, they could hear thumping sounds coming from high inside the house.
I'm going in. Mr. Tarr, you're with me. Nimble and Ketch, get that girl. Bring her back.
Dead or alive?
Asked Mr. Ketch, with a smug smile.
Alive, you moron. I want to know what she knows.
Maybe she's one of them. The ones who done for us in Vancouver and Melbourne and...
Get her. Get her now.
The blonde man and the hat and moustache hurried up the hill. Mr. Dandy and Mr. Tarr stood outside the door to number 33.
Force it.
Mr. Tarr put his shoulder against the door and began to lean his weight on it.
It's reinforced. Protected.
Nothing one Jack can do that another can't fix.
He pulled off his glove, put his hand against the door, muttered something in a language older than English.
Now try it.
Tarr leaned against the door, grunted, and pushed. This time, the lock gave, and the door swung open.
Nicely done.
There was a crashing noise from far above them, up at the top of the house. The man Jack met them halfway down the stairs. Mr. Dandy grinned at him, without any humour, but with perfect teeth.
Hello, Jack Frost. I thought you had the boy.
I did. He got away.
Again?
Jack Dandy's smile grew wider and chillier and even more perfect.
Once is a mistake, Jack. Twice is a disaster.
We'll get him. This ends tonight.
It had better.
He'll be in the graveyard.
The three men hurried down the stairs. The man Jack sniffed the air. He had the scent of the boy in his nostrils, a prickle at the nape of his neck. He felt like all this had happened years before. He paused, pulled on his long black coat, which had hung in the front hall, incongruous, beside Mr. Frost's tweed jacket and fawn Macintosh. The front door was open to the street and the daylight had almost gone. This time, the man Jack knew exactly which way to go. He did not pause, but simply walked out of the house and hurried up the hill towards the graveyard. The graveyard gates were closed when Scarlet reached them. Scarlet pulled at them desperately, but the gates were padlocked for the night. And then Bod was beside her.
Do you know where the key is?
We don't have time.
He pushed close to the metal bars.
Put your arms around me.
You what?
Just put your arms around me and close your eyes.
Scarlet stared at Bod, as if daring him to try something. Then she held him tightly and screwed her eyes shut.
Okay.
Bod leaned against the bars of the graveyard gates. They counted as part of the graveyard, and he hoped that his freedom of the graveyard might just, possibly just this time, cover other people too. And then, like smoke, Bod slipped through the bars.
You can open your eyes.
She did.
How did you do that?
This is my home. I can do things here.
The sound of shoes slapping against the pavement, and two men were on the other side of the gates, rattling them, pulling at them.
Hello,
said Jack Ketch, with a twitch of his moustache, and he smiled at Scarlet through the bars like a rabbit with a secret. He had a black silk cord tied around his left forearm, and now he was tugging at it with his gloved right hand. He pulled it off his arm and into his hand, testing it, running it from hand to hand, as if he was about to make a cat's cradle.
Come on out, girlie. It's all right. No one's going to hurt you.
We just need you to answer some questions. We're on official business.
He lied. There was nothing official about the Jacks of all trades, although there had been Jacks in governments, and in police forces, and in other places besides.
Run!
Said Bod to Scarlet, pulling at her hand. She ran.
Did you see that?
What?
I saw somebody with her. A boy.
The boy?
How would I know? Here, give me a hand up.
The bigger man put his hands out, linked them to make a step, and Jack Ketch's black-clad foot went into it. Lifted up, he scrambled onto the top of the gates and jumped down to the drive, landing on all fours like a frog. He stood up.
Find another way in! I'm going after them.
And he sprinted off, up the winding path that led into the graveyard.
Just tell me what we're doing.
Bod was walking fast through the twilight graveyard, but he was not running, not yet.
How do you mean?
I think that man wanted to kill me. Did you see how he was playing with that black cord?
I'm sure he does. That man, Jack, your Mr. Frost, he was going to kill me. He's got a knife.
He's not my Mr. Frost. Well, I suppose he is, sort of. Sorry. Where are we going?
First, we put you somewhere safe. Then I deal with them.
All around Bod, the inhabitants of the graveyard were waking and gathering, worried and alarmed.
Bod, what is happening?
Bad people. Can Alok keep an eye on them? Let me know where they are at all times. We have to hide Scarlet. Any ideas?
The chapel crypt.
First place they'll look.
Who are you talking to?
Asked Scarlet, staring at Bod as if he had gone mad.
Inside the hill,
Bod thought.
Yes, good call. Scarlet, do you remember the place where we found the indigo man?
Kind of. A dark place. I remembered there wasn't anything to be scared of.
I'm taking you up there.
They hurried up the path. Scarlet could tell that Bod was talking to people as he went, but could only hear his side of the conversation. It was like hearing someone talk on a phone, which reminded her.
My mum's going to go spear. I'm dead.
No, you're not. Not yet. Not for a long time.
Then, to someone else.
Two of them now, together. Okay.
They reached the Frobisher Mausoleum.
The entrance is behind the button coffin on the left. If you hear anyone coming, and it's not me, go straight down to the very bottom. Do you have anything to make light?
Yeah, a little LED thing on my keyring.
Good.
He pulled open the door to the mausoleum.
And be careful. Don't trip or anything.
Where are you going?
This is my home. I'm going to protect it.
Scarlet squeezed the LED keyring and went down on her hands and knees. The space behind the coffin was tight, but she went through the hole into the hill and pulled the coffin back as best she could. In the dim LED light, she could see stone steps. She stood upright, and hand on the wall, walked down three steps, then stopped and sat, hoping that Bod knew what he was doing. And she waited.
Where are they now?
One fellow's up by the Egyptian wall.